This is Teachers Talk Radio, and you are listening live.
Hello, and welcome to The Twilight Show. Thanks for joining me. Today, the subject of the show is using escape room games in the classroom.
This is Teachers Talk Radio, and you are listening live. Tune in live at ttradio.org, or to join in the conversation, download the Podbean app and search Teachers Talk Radio. Follow the hashtag TTRadio. Tune in, talk it out with Teachers Talk Radio.
Welcome to The Twilight Show, everyone. I'm Graham Stanley, speaking to you live from Mexico City. I'll be talking about how you can use escape room games in the classroom today. Let's start with what an escape room is. Now, I'm sure most of you listening won't need any introduction to this, but some of you might be scratching your head, so I think this is mainly for the benefit of all of you out there who only have a vague or no idea of what an escape room is, or an escape room game is. So an escape room game is an adventure game set within a confined space in which players solve puzzles, crack codes, and open locks in order to find clues, and usually, but not always, find their way out of a room. Now, these games often have a storyline, so players can find themselves role-playing exciting scenarios such as explorers trapped in an ancient tomb looking for treasure, or spies trying to solve a mystery whilst breaking out of a criminal organization's headquarters, etc. And since the first live escape room game opened in Japan in 2007, this type of game has become a very popular form of entertainment, with new escape room games popping up in cities all over the world. Now, if you've never heard of them, if you haven't seen any of these facilities, then start looking and you'll be surprised to find there are probably escape room games near where you live. If you live in a city or a reasonably big town, for instance. Now, escape room games can appeal to all ages. They're popular with work colleagues for team building exercises. They're used for children's birthday parties, or can be simply something different to do with friends or family at the weekend. And the origin of live escape room games can be found in the room escape video game genre, believe it or not. Escape the Room video games are a genre of computer games that usually take place within a single room or a building with a number of virtual rooms. And I don't think you see many of these games these days, but around 10 years ago or so, or a bit longer, I think, when flash games were popular, they were everywhere. And it's definitely something that I used to use a lot with young learner students in the classroom. These types of games can be adapted for use in the classroom because escape room video games are difficult to solve and they have built-in information gaps. And because of that, they're ideal for promoting problem solving and other skills that learners need, such as fostering communication skills, collaboration. And this is true of live escape room games too, which I'll be concentrating on in today's show because I think that's more relevant these days. In digital or video game escape room games, the gameplay usually begins with you finding you've been locked in a room for some reason, and you have to find your way out. And you explore the room or rooms by pointing and clicking on various objects to find clues and hidden items. These items can then be used or combined with other objects to solve puzzles that will finally allow you to get out of the room. Here's an example scenario of the kind of thing you can expect from an escape room video game using a video game called Sign, which has been around since 2018. At one point in the game, players need to find three different coloured plastic shapes, each of which has a number printed on it. And another clue behind a painting on a wall tells the players they need to multiply or add these numbers together so that they can find the combination to a safe. And it'll take students, for example, some time to find these objects and figure out what to do. That's how they can be adapted, for example, for the language classroom, because the teacher, armed with the answers, can provide the students with the information they need in the target language, which makes it easier and quicker for the students to complete the game, which is something they want to do, and provides rich listening practice that the teacher can adapt to the language level of the learners. Now, as a language teacher, this type of game, these computer games, became very interesting because of the potential for exploiting them for language practice with students. But you'll find, I hope, that escape room games can be used with lots of other subjects as well. And I'm going to try and show you in this show how that can happen. Now, that's just one example, this idea of using language to exploit these types of games. It's an easy and effective way to treat the escape room video game as a live listening activity for language practice, for example. And while the learners are playing the game, you can read out the clues so they can find the way out. And you can tell if the learners understand what you say if you see them making progress in the game, if they're playing on laptops or in a computer room or even on mobiles. And teachers can easily get listening scripts by searching for what is called a walkthrough, which is a detailed list of instructions of how to complete a game that players of popular video games post online to help other players complete them. Now, that doesn't happen so much because a lot of the players actually post videos which aren't as useful for this type of activity, unfortunately, but you still find them. And the beauty of this type of information gap activity is that it works well for practicing different skills when it comes to language practice. You can also get learners working together in pairs to discuss how to solve the game. So that's a little bit about the origin of escape room games and how you may want to use digital escape room games with learners. I'm going to continue the rest of the show by talking about how you can turn your classroom, be it a language classroom or a subject classroom, into a live escape room game. And I'll also talk you through the process of doing this, give you some tips so it'll help you when it comes to designing your own, and also explain what you need by looking at an example escape room game I designed. But first, here, as usual, is the Teachers Talk Radio news.
This show is brought to you in partnership with John Catt Educational, publishing professional development books and resources to support great teaching and learning in schools around the world. Have you checked out their latest releases? Use the code JCTTR 2324 for 20% off your order. Don't miss out. Visit johncattbookshop.com to explore their full range of titles and advance your own professional development today. Happy reading.
This is Teachers Talk Radio, and this is Teachers Talk Radio News.
You are listening to Teachers Talk Radio News, and here is a roundup of some of the main stories over the past 7 days. On the eve of the National Education Unions Conference, which runs in Bournemouth from the 3rd to the 6th of April, it looks increasingly as though a ballot on strike action will be taken. An indicative ballot, in which over half the members of the union participated, showed 9 in 10 in favour of a ballot on strike action. Daniel Kabedi, General Secretary of the Union, indicated that if conference votes in favour of strike action, it will be serving notice to this government and future governments rather than ensuring that strikes did happen. However, he also outlined his belief in the gravity of the current crisis facing education in an interview with Radio 4's Today programme.
There is a mood of desperation, if we're being honest. The profession is very much on its knees. Morale is at an all-time low. And of course, we can see that in the crisis in recruitment and retention. 9% of the teaching profession left the profession last year prior to retirement. The government is continually missing its recruitment targets for new teachers. We missed it by 50% for secondary teachers this year. Quite simply, if we continue on this direction of travel, education will grind to a halt.
Other teachers' unions, including the NASUWT, have indicated they will not be holding a ballot on strike action. However, Patrick Roach, General Secretary of the NASUWT, has called for the replacement of the School Teachers' Pay Review Body, or the Independent Pay Review Body as it is known, with a Teachers' Pay Commission, stating that the current pay review body is not independent, since its remit is set by the government and its members chosen by the government. And this year, the pay review body has been told by the government that it must set a pay level lower than last year and focus on shortage subjects. In other news, this week, Amanda Spielman gave her first interview since leaving as head of Ofsted. On the Difficult Women podcast, she was asked by interviewer Rachel Johnson, while reflecting on her career, about the death of Ruth Perry. Much loved and dedicated head teacher Ruth Perry had committed suicide after an Ofsted inspection, which the coroner had characterised as brutal and insensitive. Spielman said that the inspection had been carried out exactly as it should be. There was nothing wrong with the inspection, but, she noted sadly, it is at times difficult to tell people tough messages. And she compared the Ofsted process with its single word, judgments, as being similar to a driving test, which no one likes to fail. This week, the website Teacher Tap, which regularly carries out surveys into teachers' attitudes and opinions, surveyed teachers' reaction to the Dame Sarah Kahn report into threats to public cohesion, in which she'd suggested the possibility of exclusion zones around schools of 150 metres. This came in reaction to groups of parents demonstrating outside schools in reaction to what they perceived as insults to religion among the staff. 58% of teachers surveyed thought this was a good idea. 48%, though, said yes, but the exclusion zones should not exclude teachers' unions or striking teachers. In another Teacher Tap survey this week, the website reported that over 20% of teachers had seen evidence of cheating using artificial intelligence. This was up from 6% last year. Teachers' views were also surveyed in an NASUWT poll that was reported in the Independent newspaper. In a survey of thousands of teachers, 9 out of 10 stated that stress and workload had had an adverse effect on their mental health, and 12% said they used alcohol to cope. In some powerful interviews, other teachers described vomiting before work and having cried at work in reaction to student behaviour and stress. This follows the widely reported news item on the BBC, which said that 1 in 5 teachers in England had been hit by a pupil in the previous year, and teachers reporting that spitting, swearing, and chair throwing were happening often. This week, the website Education Uncovered, led by the investigative reporter Warwick Mansell, reported the story of Sir Paul Marshall, chair of the Ark Schools Academy Trust. Sir Paul, multi-millionaire hedge fund manager and co-owner of GB News, was reported by the organisation Hope Not Hate which confronts hate speech in the media, as having retweeted, either casually or thoughtfully, a number of the most extreme Islamophobic and homophobic tweets. Union members at ARC schools have called for him to resign, as no longer fit and proper to be associated with education. And Labour MP Sam Tarry has urged the ARC Trust to sever links with Sir Paul. So far, they are standing by him. And finally, in a widely reported story which appeared in The Guardian and on the BBC and in the Independent newspaper, parents at a Boyne primary school in Aberdeenshire were furious after the photographer, Tempest Photography, issued two sets of photographs of the children. One, where the pupils with additional needs had been removed. Parents received an apology from the local council, which said the decision had not been taken by the school and the link to the photographs had been removed. This has been your Teachers Talk Radio news for this week. You can find archived interviews of Daniel Kabidi, the General Secretary of the NEU, in-depth discussion and analysis of the role of Ofsted in many past Teachers Talk Radio programmes, as well as the weekly teacher review on Sunday mornings on YouTube. Thank you for listening.
And welcome back, everyone. This show is all about escape room games and how teachers can make use of this in their own classrooms. For some years now, escape room games have become a popular entertainment franchise, with multiple organizations popping up in cities all over the world, offering different experiences. They usually invite teams of people, small teams of people, maybe 3 to 8 maximum probably, to try to escape from a confined space within the within an hour usually. And they're popular, as I said before, with children, families, adults, and even companies. They're great team-building activities. I would love to know if anyone listening has ever been to one. If you are listening, come and join me on Podbean and come and share your experience with me. If you're listening back to the recording, then have you been to an escape room game? If not, I highly recommend it. If you haven't had the pleasure of trying out an escape room game experience for yourself, well, here's an example of one I went to some years ago in Liverpool with a group of teachers. The story involved a mad professor and his lab on a tropical island and the ticking clock, because there's always a ticking clock in an escape room game, was that he had placed some chemicals in a locked box that were going to be mixed together in an hour's time. And our objective was to go through the lab and find the locked box, unlock it, and then neutralize the chemicals before the hour was up. Now, that sounds a little bit easy. It definitely wasn't. There were lots of different clues that would lead us to get combinations for locked doors that would lead us to other rooms, lots of puzzles. And if we didn't succeed, then the whole island, the idea would be the whole island would be contaminated for decades and all life, plants and animals on the island would die, including ourselves, of course. Fortunately, we managed to solve all the puzzles put in front of us and finished about 55 minutes later unlocking the box and preventing the ecological disaster. Now, it could have gone the other way, though, and this is where the excitement comes in when you're playing games such as this. As it was, we experienced an adrenaline flow, and during the game, we were intellectually stimulated by a range of puzzles that had us involved in everything from code breaking to pattern matching, to speed reading, to find specific clues, to open locked drawers, and a range of other tasks and puzzles. If you're a teacher and are intrigued about these types of games, and if after listening to this show you think you may want to turn your classroom into a live escape room, which is what I'm proposing, then I recommend one of the first things you do, if you haven't already done so, is to go and try out an escape room game yourself. Not only will that show you the kind of exciting atmosphere and challenge you can give your learners, but the exposure to the puzzles will undoubtedly give you some ideas you can bring back to the classroom. And that was definitely my experience, at least. And I have done a number of escape room games since that first one I did. There are an increasing number of teachers starting to use escape room games in education for all sorts of subjects. History, for example, geography, and language teaching, as I said before, is a good use of escape room games. There are also many websites and resources that teachers can now use if you need some help with puzzles, etc. If you search the web for escape room games for education, or for your subject indeed, you'll find some examples that other teachers have created, which you can use and adapt. But let's now look at some of the basics if you want to turn your own classroom into an escape room game before getting on to the idea of how you approach the design of one. The first thing, of course, you should think about and continue to have in your mind throughout the process of thinking this through, if you are looking at the potential of using escape room games for education, is whether you can realistically do this and still keep your learning objectives and outcomes at the forefront. And I think this is possible in most cases, but I think it's a good word of warning that you should always keep it in mind, and please don't get carried away by the fun factor. Now, let's look at some practicalities and the process of turning a classroom into a live escape room game. Of course, unlike escape room games designed for entertainment, which usually involve several locked rooms and which have been decorated around a particular theme, you'll most likely be limited to just one space, i.e. the classroom, and also limited to what you can do to transform this space. I would think it would be difficult, for example, to change the appearance of your classroom so it resembles a pirate ship or a medieval castle. And even if you were able to do this, the time it would take to transform it into this and then transform it back to a regular classroom would be inconceivable, I think, for practical reasons. But, well, maybe that last one, the prison, maybe that last one isn't difficult for learners to imagine. Just kidding. Despite the limitations, however, with just a few props and the right kind of storyline, I think students will be able to use their imagination and get excited about whatever scenario you are managed to conjure up. For example, you could pretend the classroom is an apartment and you can use props to make it more like an apartment. You can hide clues in the classroom space you have. Is there a wall clock, for instance? Well, you can tape a key to the back of a clock. You could tape clues under chairs or desks. Or, as you'll see, it's something I've done. You can roll up a piece of paper with a clue on it and throw it in the corner of the room. So it's not obvious that it's a clue, but it sticks out as something that isn't normally in the classroom or looks a bit out of place. Things like that work well. Can any of the drawers in your desk be locked? If so, there's a great place to hide things and to lock things up. Do you have books in a bookcase or bookshelf? Well, I would hope so if you are in a classroom. Well, hide a piece of paper containing a clue on page 79 on a particular book, and then provide a series of puzzles in other parts of the classroom that tell the learners what the title of the book is and what page they should look at. The puzzles you can use can require the learners to use something they already have learned, for example. So you're asking them for prior knowledge, or you can also ask them to learn something new in order to solve them. Imagine you are students in your classroom and pretend it's an apartment. Think about it now. Where would you look for clues? Where would you hide them? What kind of places or spaces have you got that you could take advantage of? When it comes to turning your classroom into a live escape room game, there are lots of things you can do and also many benefits. For instance, when these types of cooperative games are designed around specific learning outcomes, the learners can work together in an environment that, according to educator and game designer Scott Nicholson, who I recommend you look up on the internet, he has lots of articles about how to turn your classrooms into escape room games, or even libraries and schools into escape room game settings. And he says that it sets the groundwork for active learning and social constructivism. And turning your classroom into a live escape room game is not only a lot of fun for students, but it also allows teachers to design an activity for language practice or for other subjects that can combine puzzles, ciphers, role-playing, and storytelling. And shortly I'll talk you through an escape room game that I designed that will hopefully give you a good example of some of the things you can do. In Scott Nicholson's excellent article on creating engaging games for the classroom that he wrote in 2018, he writes about what students can expect to find when you turn your classroom into escape room game. So let me just read a little bit from that article. Students file in. They're surprised to see their classroom transformed. Desks have been arranged in circles, and in the middle of each circle is a box with multiple locks. On top of each box is a folder that says classified. The room is dark, and at the bell, a video begins to play, informing the students that they have been selected to use whatever they have learned over this semester to help solve a case before the suspect's flight out of the country leaves in 30 minutes. The evidence file has been provided and the recovery team has found a locked box. They do not know if it is safe to open, however, so the challenge is to open the box safely and decide if the suspect needs to be detained for further questioning. So there's an example scenario. Without a doubt, I think it's an experience which is very far removed from the usual classroom activity. One thing to keep in mind is how you adapt an escape room game for large groups if you are teaching large groups of students. Typically, live escape room games, as I said before, for entertainment are designed for small groups of about 3, 7, 8 players. So if your class is small, then this is ideal. But with larger classes, you will need to split learners into groups and make sure the gameplay has been designed so that everyone is included and can participate. As you can imagine, turning a classroom into an escape room game can sometimes prove to be difficult. For one, space is limited and there are only so many places you can hide things, despite some of the suggestions I made earlier. One alternative then is a breakout game. So rather than escaping a room, your students break into locked boxes. And this is what Scott Nicholson was describing before in his article. For this, and if you want to make it harder for learners to find things in an escape room game anyway, you may need to invest in some specific props or see what you have at home or at the school you work in that you can borrow. These might involve lockable boxes or suitcases, padlocks with keys or combination locks should be easy enough to locate, for example. Other props that you may or may not have, but are great, for example, are black lights. In other words, the kind of torches that show up invisible ink when exposed to ultraviolet light. And you'd be surprised just how cheaply and easily you can find these in toy shops or online. But again, don't worry if this sounds too complicated or faffy. You can generally start with whatever you have at hand and design your puzzles around this. And you don't even have to use locks. You could actually use envelopes and give them out to students who provide who answer clues to you, for example. So every time they answer a clue, they come to you with the answer, and if the answer is correct to a cipher or some kind of puzzle, then you give them another envelope with another puzzle in, etc. And this is a good way of doing it. So before I walk you through an example escape room game, let's take a more detailed look at why you may want to do this. After all, it's probably clear to you now that in order for this to work, you do have to put in quite a bit of time. And the question for all teachers when faced with this extra investment of time is, and I'm sure you've already started asking yourself this, is it worth it? Well, escape room games are cooperative games with the players working together to win or lose as a team. And so the students are involved in active learning that is social and which promotes the use of real communication and collaboration. So there's a lot of team building involved in this, as well as and especially problem solving. So why do it? Well, the other main reason is fun. Escape room games can be a lot of fun. Now, does learning have to be fun? Perhaps not. But I definitely believe that teaching should be inspiring and interesting, and the experience the students have should be memorable if it is to be effective. If you design activities which are fun, this can definitely help you. In the game designer Ralph Koster's book, Theory of Fun, which he wrote in 2005, which I recommend, he speaks of fun as a source of enjoyment, and that it's all about our brains feeling good and the release of endorphins into our system. And Costa also states that because it's important to the survival of the species that we learn, our bodies reward us for it with moments of pleasure. And it's for these reasons I think teachers shouldn't turn their back on fun or playing games in the classroom. Designing activities that are fun for students can be a great ways for students to learn, in particular when they're involved in something that they feel is play rather than work. Play. Yes, what is play and why include it in learning and teaching? Well, there is no one accepted definition of what play is. It's an interesting word. Huizinga, back in 1955, called it something that people engage with outside the real world, whereas a more recent definition puts it forward that play is critical to dealing with the variability of the real world. So there, with two opposing definitions, you can see that people don't agree. Now, what we can agree on is that not only is playfulness a great source of happiness, but it can also help us be more flexible, creative, and resilient. And Piaget once wrote that play is the answer to how anything new comes about. Despite all of this, the role of play and games has not usually been central to school education, has it? There is evidence that through play, learners can connect learning to pleasure and will be more receptive to learning because of it. And teachers may also find themselves better connected to their learners as you bring more imagination, curiosity, and fun to your classes. There are then some very good reasons why we might want to introduce play into our classrooms. And a very effective way of doing this is through games. I'm sure most of you out there listening now have played games with students in order to help them learn. And this idea of playing games is definitely become popular with certain types of subjects and contexts and students. The difference between play and games is that play usually is non-goal-oriented, and games tend to have rules and goals. And because of this, games can be easily implemented and be powerful learning tools. But why incorporate games into learning? Well, perhaps using games is a more natural way to learn than traditional classrooms. After all, humans have been learning by playing games since the beginning of time, haven't they? Okay, so I would now like to look at an example escape room game that I designed for English language learners, and I'll take you through it and explain the rationale behind the design of the puzzles, the story and clues, etc. And although this has been designed for language learners, I'm hoping that me taking you through the process of what the students can expect to experience in the classroom, but also talking about my general, the things that I learned through designing this game and reading about design of these types of games, that will save you some time and show you that you can do it for your own subject, whatever that may be. Let's see. I'll explain this game in the way, or I'll begin to explain it in the way that I introduce it to students. And although this is not the way that I suggest you should approach the design of a game, it is a way, the best way that I can explain how it works. And then I'll look at the design of games after I have talked a little bit about what the activity is itself and how it plays out in the classroom. Because I think that's an important thing to talk about if you want to start designing your own escape room games. Let's start with the scenario. And I tell the learners in this game that they're all members of an organization called Fixit that offers a service to solve problems no matter how difficult or dangerous. And they have been contacted by a mysterious client who needs the players to recover an antique. It's a mask that has been reported as stolen. The players, or learners, have been sent to the house of a Spanish diplomat, Enrique Chabelli, who is currently not at home. And they're told that apparently a mask has been hidden somewhere in the room they are currently in, because whoever planned to take the mask was not able to leave the house with it because of the security restrictions in the diplomat's house, but that they more likely plan to come back or send someone back to find it. To help them, the players have been given the briefing that was given to the Criminal Investigation Department, the CID, that morning. And as they look for clues, they are told that the CID detectives are on their way to the house to search for the mask. So the students are told they have 30 minutes to find it before the detectives get there. This is the start of the game. I set it up to involve groups of students, and these students were all upper intermediate language learners and sitting at different tables. And one of the first things I do is involve them in speed reading of a text so that they get the gist of things, and then I can answer questions about the text. And this is the briefing that I give them. And the briefing talks about six potential suspects that were at a dinner party the Friday before the action takes place. And the learners could share with their teammates their initial opinions about who may have had the opportunity to steal the mask, who may have had the best motive, etc. And I wrote the character profiles to make sure that there would be differences of opinion between students and that each one of the suspects potentially had the opportunity and motives to steal the object. The profiles, though, aren't included in the briefing, and the learners have to search for them in the classroom or the apartment, as we're imagining the classroom is. More about this soon. You'll also notice that I only give the students 30 minutes, not the usual 60 minutes that an escape room designed for entertainment gives. And I think this is about the right time. I think it's important to not make the game part of the activity last too long. So first of all, 30 minutes is a reasonable enough amount of time if you only have one room and limit the amount of puzzles, which is another thing you have to make sure that you do. Don't fill your classroom with lots of puzzles so that the students run out of time. It needs to be achievable. The other main reason for just giving or designing a room around 30 minutes is that because you want to maximize the learning opportunities. And in my case, because they are language learners, I want to give them opportunities to practice language. And I throw them into situations and give them time to discuss and use English, for example, together. But you'll see that is only part of the reason for doing this. I think once the game is over and they've found or not found the mask, and it doesn't really matter which, but it does matter that they have a chance to succeed and a chance to fail. That provides the adrenaline flow and the game part. So after this, then I have a debriefing session, and you'll see what I do in that in a little while. For me, this is probably the most important part of the lesson, that what happens after the game, where I give the learners a chance to use language again, to discuss what happened and what they did, what they understood happened in the story, is really probably the important part, as I said before. So who stole it, who, what their motive was, will largely still be unclear at the end of the game. And I did this deliberately in order to generate more opportunities for students to speak and to put forward their hypotheses and to discuss and debate together. Let me explain now how the game develops so you can see how this fits in. So as I mentioned earlier, to help the learners, they're given a briefing of what was given to the CID that morning, and I ask them to speed read the first half of that CID briefing and take note of the information they think may be necessary. And that briefing basically is from the diplomat and just says that this mask, he's a collector, has gone missing, and that he last saw it just before the dinner party he held on the Friday before, and the six people that were present at the dinner party, he has written some notes about them, given their photos, and also trying to sort of explain what perhaps their motive might have been in some cases. Unfortunately, the profiles are not there. And Enrique has said that he didn't have time to give the detectives, the CID detectives, the profiles, but they can find them in the apartment. They should be easy to find. And in the second half of the CID briefing, there's a little bit about the mask. And that's what the students are given to read very quickly. And now, I could have just given the learners the profile texts. This is where part of the game comes in. The learners are invited next to explore the classroom, which becomes an apartment for the purpose of the game. And here is an important lesson when it comes to game design. You need to do what you can to make sure the learners find things you have hidden in the order you want them to. I made copies of these profiles and scrunched them up, leaving balls of paper on the floor of the classroom. Now, because they were in obvious sight of the learners, it meant they found these first rather than the other clues I made more difficult to find. And I'll talk about the other clues later. And this is an important aspect of this type of game design, especially when you're limited to one space, as we are probably in our classroom. One thing I did to add to the intrigue and have the learners wondering was only provide 5 out of the 6 suspect profiles, even though the briefing mentions six. And I did this to keep them while looking around the classroom, to keep them looking rather around the classroom for a while, but also to point the finger later at one particular profile, which is important to them being able to solve the game. I talked earlier about the learners talking together to discuss the suspects and this being an important part of what I wanted them to do. Well, after the CID briefing explaining the purpose of the game, which I did together with the learners, I left them on their own, stepping in only when there were difficulties, when they had difficulties or I felt they needed a clue or a hint. And after learners had time to read and discuss the profiles of the suspects, I did this by making an announcement that they only had 20 minutes left and should start searching the apartment to find the mask, and that there was one particular clue hidden somewhere in the apartment that they needed to find.
This show is brought to you in partnership with John Catt Educational, publishing professional development books and resources to support great teaching and learning in schools around the world. Have you checked out their latest releases? Use the code JCTTR2324 for 20% off your order. Don't miss out. Visit johncattbookshop.com to explore their full range of titles and advance your own professional development today. Happy reading.
So, underneath some of the chairs attached by sellotape, the students would next be able to find a clear plastic bag with an assortment of six pieces of, six pieces of paper, which, when pieced together like a simple jigsaw, showed an image of a man that also features on one of the guest profiles. But that picture was the guest profile that the students weren't able to find. And there was also something on the back of the completed piece of paper. So turning the image over, they would find the words Redlock and the numbers 519 written on the back. The order of that would only be available to those who put the pieces in the right order, of course. That should have helped the learners, who would now all be searching the room for something that had a red lock on it. And at the front of the class, I hid a folder with a red combination lock. When the learners keyed in the number on the clue, that was on the clue, into the lock, they were able to open the bag and find a folder that had the next clue in it. So when they unlocked the combination, they found the final guest profile in the folder. Why was this one locked up? They were meant to ask themselves, what is special about it? And I next encouraged the learners to find the actual mask. And I told them that it was somewhere in the apartment and that they were running out of time. Encouraged them to look in the more difficult parts of the room, the not so obvious places. And usually one of the students would then find the clock in the classroom and look behind it. And that's normally the place where I would choose to hide a small bag hidden behind it, would have the mask in it. But this locked bag, this would be a bag with a lock on it. And I usually used a kind of another three-number combination lock. And the students would then have to find the combination to this. And I would announce at that point, usually, that there was only 10 minutes left. So you can keep it flexible and you can announce the time, or you can give them right from the beginning the total amount of time, for example, 30 minutes. But usually I could vary the game by making these announcements. So it could mean we could spend 30 to 40 minutes if we needed it, depending on the students and how things were going. The important thing is to gauge how interested the students are and how much they're actually involved, actively involved in practicing, for example, or in this case, or learning. Now, you don't have to hide a bag with a mask in it behind a clock, but you do need to have something for them to find. Some kind of treasure is what I recommend. And you do need to make sure, excuse me, it's somewhere that the students won't look first. So inside a cupboard in the corner of the room, or even in the teacher's bag, which is something I've done before. They aren't going to, for example, open a teacher's bag unless or until you tell them to. So that's a good one. At this point, I usually tell the students they don't need to explore anymore. I don't want them kind of wasting valuable classroom time wandering around looking for things when they could be talking together. In the case of my class, because they were involved in language practice. So I tell them that they had all the information they needed, and I encourage them to sit together in groups and re-examine the information in the briefings, etc. During this time, the aha moment would come when a student usually found the 3-number code on the briefing of the 6th suspect. And this would be like a reference code at the top that normally you would just not even read, you would ignore. But if you're looking for clues on a piece of paper, then it is something that someone will spot. And that person would then go to the locked bag and use the number to unlock the lock. And inside the bag would be the missing mask. And with a bit of luck, they would have managed to find the mask before the police arrived, before the time was up. But if they didn't, then this is good too. You tell them they have to leave the scene and you can later reveal what they missed, which is just as much fun, even though a little bit disappointing, than if they managed to solve the problems, all the problems, and finish the actual game successfully. So let's assume that the students have now solved the puzzles and have escaped the room. What happens? Well, there are follow-up learning opportunities that I built in here to take advantage of this. First of all, it isn't clear who actually stole the mask. They may have found the mask, but they don't know who stole it and why it was placed in a bag and hidden in the diplomat's apartment, do they? So the next part of the class, you hold a debrief, which could be either the same class or the class afterwards, and you add the role of a fix-it, head of fix-it, and they as the agents, and you can role-play this, and you tell them they need to tell their supervisor what they have found, how they found it, and what they think has happened. And at this point, you make sure everyone has a copy of all the documents to refer to, and you can ask them to work again in their groups to discuss the questions that you ask. What are these questions? Well, first of all, who do they think stole the mask and why? You get them talking about this first, and they discuss in groups together, and then each of the group reports to the class their theory. But then you ask, once you've had a chance for them to discuss and maybe come to some kind of agreement together or not, but then you ask, if one of the guests stole the masks, how come it was still in Enrique's apartment? Surely, why did they bother trying to steal the mask if they knew they weren't able to get it out of the apartment because of the security arrangements? Does that change who they think stole the mask and why they stole it or why they hid it in the room? So that should get their creative juices flowing and put some kind of element of doubt into what they think, which is the whole point of this, to try and get them talking. Another question that you can give to them shortly after this is, what do you think the police will do when they arrive at the apartment. And the other thing is, what information about the mask or the suspects are you going to give your mystery the person who was a mystery who asked the fix-it to investigate, but also what are you going to tell the police, if anything? The idea here is not for the students to discover the real story. You just get them to come up with their own ideas and theories and discuss and agree on it. You can vote on it if you want, if they found that useful, if you find that useful. And then it's up to you, but I would say most of the students would like to know what really happened. And so you then direct the conversation by getting them to work it out for themselves, or you can just simply tell it to them. And here is what really happened in this story, in this game. So Enrique has money problems, and he decided to report the mask missing in order to claim on insurance. While being interviewed by the police, they asked to search his apartment, and he had to agree, but he contacted Fixit to find and remove the mask before the police had time to arrive. Now remember, he wasn't at his apartment, so he couldn't have gone there himself. And he had hidden the mask in the apartment, but knew the police would find it if they'd searched, because he left some clues that he would be able to give, because he thought he would be able to get someone else, a friend of his, to come and do it, but that friend was unavailable. Fortunately, if all went well, Fixit found the mask, and so the police returned the information Enrique gave about the suspects. Now, the interesting thing about this is, I think, it explains some of the incoherences that are often inherent in escape room games. For instance, why, if someone locks something up, would they leave clues around? Now, most of these plot holes are ignored as players get wrapped up in the fun of the games, but I think it's kind of interesting. And if you have a class that has played escape room games, you can talk about this and whether the stories are logical or reasonable or incoherent. That's another additional activity you can do. Related to other follow-up activities that this escape room game that I've just described lends itself to, in order to practice speaking and writing, while you have the following. You can role play interviews. Students can take the role of one of the suspects. Someone could play Enrique as they're being interviewed by the police, for example. You could play the game of alibi. You could have two of the suspects being accused, and they claim they have an alibi at the party, and good reasons why they can't be them, and they're interviewed to see if their alibi holds. You could help the students by asking them to write reports. They could choose a character and write a report of what happened at the party and who that character thinks actually stole the missing mask. So I hope all of this made sense, and you can see the value of designing such a game to use with students. Now, when it comes to designing your own game, there are a number of things I recommend that hopefully you can see I did when designing the one I just walked you through. Namely, number one, learning outcomes. This is the place to start. I think it's important that the main purpose of the escape room game is to give students the opportunity to learn, and in the case of my game, to receive opportunities to practice language, albeit reading, listening, and speaking mainly. Genre, setting, and narrative are three things you should think about as well. I think once you know what you want to achieve by doing the game, you should look at what kind of genre, setting, and narrative you can, that lends itself well to that. It could be obvious if you're a history teacher, for example, or a geography teacher, or even a language teacher who's looking at a particular type of language, that would be the place to start for this. Could be a detective story with a twist. Information gaps are important to add to it, as you probably noticed. If there's a mystery to pique student curiosity, that can always help. If you want to encourage discussion, then that will give you an idea of the kind of activities you want to build into it, like my game. It's important to have coherent narratives that support the actual game dynamics, but also support the language and learning objectives. And then it comes to puzzles. Now, when it comes to puzzles, you don't want students to be stuck for long on these puzzles. You don't want them having, you don't want the puzzles to be too difficult. So you have to think about the difficulty. You don't want the puzzles to be too easy, of course. You also should think about the variety and the number of puzzles that you put into your escape room games. You don't take up too much of the time. It needs to be sufficient enough to engage the students, but not too much to frustrate them or take up too much of classroom time, especially if it's not time that they're learning. If they're learning while doing the puzzles, then that's fine. So for me, with the game that I described, it helped for me to look at the sequence of the game in order. So I produced a flow chart so I could see the overall picture. And even though this game is depicted as a linear game, there are some things that could happen at different points, especially if you have just one space, as I described. So you don't want players to find the mask before they find the profiles, etc., or the locked box. It doesn't really matter to a certain extent if they find something like the bag, which is locked, but they don't have the cord to open it. But sometimes the students finding things in the wrong order can be frustrating or can spoil the narrative that you're gently revealing as the game goes along. So I definitely, for example, didn't want them really to find the locked pouch which contained the mask without beforehand opening the other locked pouch. Although if they had done that, it wouldn't have mattered much because the combination was in the first locked pouch. The other thing is hints and clues. If the students are having difficulty, you really can help them. And you can tell them that they can ask you for hints and you can point them in the right direction. After all, this is not about the students having difficulty completing the game. It's all about the students learning or having opportunities to practice what you want. It's all about the learning objectives. Remember to keep that in mind as the game is going on. Suggested hints include telling the students where to look if they haven't found a clue, giving them a hint that they need to cut black cards up to read a secret message, for example, that the combination for the golden lock is on one of the guest profiles. You can be very explicit or quite obscure, depending on the circumstance. And that hopefully gives you an idea of how you might want to go about designing your own game. Okay, so let's look a little bit more at some of the other reasons why you might want students to be involved in this, and also some of the things you need to take into consideration if you're doing this type of game. Now, much of the fun from these types of games arises out of comprehension of and mastering a system, mastering trying to kind of problem solve. The puzzle solving and problem solving part that players are involved in during the playing of this game is very important. And it's also involving students in something that you could say is embodied learning. So the kinesthetic elements to the escape room game experience makes it more memorable than students just sitting at desks and looking at books. And teachers know this anyway through other types of active learning that are going on. But rather than an intellectual process of internalization, this type of learning, if it's socially situated and adaptive, then you involve students in the process of them continuously examining their environment, and any practice or learning that takes place will be more memorable in this way. At least that is what I think is the case. And this more embodied view of learning is interesting because I think we have very few options in a normal classroom situation for students to embrace this type of movement or embodied learning in the classroom. And when they are fully engaged in a game, they don't generally notice just how much time they're spending doing this, or what they're learning and what they're getting out of it, which can be very interesting for students. And as a teacher, it's very interesting to see when the students are fully absorbed in this type of activity, or any activity really. When players are fully absorbed in this type of game and they lose track of time, this is often colloquially known as being in the zone. And there's a psychologist, Mihail Csikszentmihalyi, I think is the pronunciation of the name, who called this concept flow. And this is a state in which a person is fully immersed in an activity. And this type of experience can be fascinating to watch, but also when you are completely focused on, for example, playing a game, then and you get lost in it, absorbed by it, you have this merging of action and awareness of the present moment, and you find that students are involved with a high level of concentration, and you can almost see their brains working hard as it's happening. It's fascinating to watch, as I said before. And another advantage of using escape room games for education and turning your classroom into a live escape room game is that the opportunity to involve learners in problem solving is very easy. Problem solving was identified as being an important factor in education even back at the beginning of the 20th century by Dewey, and has been later built upon. There's a interesting model by Bransford and Stein that was introduced in the 80s called the ideal method for problem solving, which is worth talking to learners about if you find it something interesting they might find interesting. And the ideal is an acronym. It's all about identifying the problem, defining it, then exploring possible strategies, acting on the strategies, and then looking at the effects of the efforts. So this is a good model for problem solving that could be interesting. So I am about out of things to tell you, and although it's a little bit shorter a show than it normally is, I'm going to wind things up there, I think. It's also a little bit more difficult to keep things going for an hour and a half when you don't have a guest, which was the case this week, and that's why I decided to start talking about escape room games. So thank you very much to all of you who have managed to sit with me and have listened live or to the recording this far. That's it from me, and there are Teachers Talk Radio shows all week on all manner of interesting topics, so please listen in live or to the recordings. Bye for now.
This show is brought to you in partnership with John Catt Educational, publishing professional development books and resources to support great teaching and learning in schools around the world. Have you checked out their latest releases? Use the code JCTTR 2324 for 20% off your order. Don't miss out. Visit johncattbookshop.com to explore their full range of titles and advance your own professional development today. Happy reading.
You've been listening to Teachers Talk Radio. Tune in live and listen back at ttradio.org. We look forward to hearing from you next time on Teachers Talk Radio.